Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. Francois, before I even get started, I have to say, Ottawa must be playing bad hockey because I have never seen you this hungover.
Oh, that's nice. And if my mom listens to this podcast, I'm sure she'll be really impressed with me right now.
At least someone's listening.
Well, obviously, we're looking at a rebuild here.
So, Eugene Melnyk came out last night to the Ottawa Sun. And we have a plan, folks. He's gone public with his plan. And all we know is that Corey Clouston and Brian Murray are going to last the entire season with this organization. They're not going to get fired. That is the plan.
It's a very precise plan. Maybe. I have to say I can understand why. Because obviously it's a complicated situation to try and bring in a new general manager mid-season. But from a charting a new course for a rebuild standpoint, I'm a little bit disappointed that, at least on the basis of the comments he's made, he wouldn't bring in a new general manager and give this person the opportunity to use the trade deadline as a platform to chart the course for towards a rebuild and to start using that opportunity to execute his or her long-term plan.
But realistically, if you brought in a general manager in time for the deadline, that guy's not going to have his own personal staff. He's not going to be surrounded by his guys. He's going to have to rely upon to assume that someone could just come in and then start doing what they should be doing right away is a bit naive. So I think at this point in time, we kind of have to temper our expectations of how the rest of the season is going to be handled. But the day Brian Murray's contract expires with this organization, hopefully they're going to have a good candidate in place with his people, because I don't think the fans are going to tolerate the status quo any longer.
Yeah, and I think that Brian Murray recognizes what the situation is. I think he realizes that regardless of what happens from here on out, there's no way he'll be brought back as general manager of this team. At least that's what I think. I think that the one of the underlying sort of implications of what Melnyk said is essentially he's basically hinting that, well, Murray won't be, they'll see it through till the end of the year. But I think what you can take away from that as well is that, like, they won't be back next year either, right? So I think Murray recognizing that is going to go into the deadline with probably a different approach than he has gone into deadlines past. And, you know, he might be able to make some moves that would be comparable to any new person coming in terms of potentially moving out bad contracts.
It's
or
much
whatnot.
Easier to be a seller than it is a buyer, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that I do think that Murray, his intention is obviously to make the Ottawa Senators a competitive hockey club, and I think he realizes that moving forward, he's in a unique position to long-term
to
set the team up
to
facilitate change,
yeah,
and facilitate sort of laying the foundation for somewhat of a rebuild. So, you know, I think he might be able to do a decent job at the deadline, you know, comparable to any other new candidate that they could potentially bring in.
Who's on your short list of candidates that you'd like to see be brought in?
Alex Anthopoulos.
I wouldn't mind seeing a thinker, someone who is business savvy, who can kind of understand the principle of that you should be treating your players like assets and not have like this sentimental attachment to his players, not be afraid to like make a tough decision if it needs to be made.
Yeah, I entirely agree with you. I would really like to see someone who understands hockey, but someone who's not necessarily, someone whose expertise is not rooted in their presence in hockey, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Like, a lot of these general managers and coaches and whatnot have been brought in on the basis of 30 years of service as either a former player or within hockey organizations, and they've just sort of transitioned into managerial roles. I would really like to see someone come in with more of a business approach to things. And I think that when you're operating in a league where salary caps are important, and really you have to, like you say, start viewing players as commodities, not as individuals, and not fall in love with these intangibles, I think I would like to see someone in sort of comparable to like a Theo Epstein, or, you know, someone who's not like a former player or former manager, former coach or whatever, you know, someone who can come in and take a totally different approach. I think that would be that's the type of person I would like to see them bring in. Now, whether that'll be the case, I'm not sure, but that's the profile of someone I'd like to see.
I think a lot of fans are at that point where you listen to Brian Murray for the duration of the season say things like, dollar for dollar. Yeah, it's so hard to make a trade in the NHL these days. We just haven't found one all season.
And then, like, Roosevelt gets peddled for Wolski.
And even Scott Hannon. And it falls on deaf ears at this point. Like, it's the cap era. We realize as fans that, like, we're smart enough. We know it's tough to make a deal. But we kind of want that, like, creativity and savvy and moxie and, like, do things maybe a little bit unconventionally. Like, make a move maybe that has a short-term loss now, but at least it has a future gain so you can work around it.
Yeah, I think someone who, you know, brings more of a objective sort of, can I say scientific approach to it? Like almost like a quantitative sort of, like a numbers person. Someone who...
You want a nerd. You want a stack.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Someone who's...
Well, I think what you... A lot of people, if you talk to some fans, they're sick of that kind of like the old boys network hockeyocracy that it has become so characteristic of many of the hockey organizations out there. Guys like Doug McLean, Mike Milbury, and some of those guys who just come off as like, you know, your typical hockey
assholes.
Oh, just clowns. You know, they're just talking heads. And I think Ottawa fans deserve someone who's smart, savvy, and creative and can think outside the box.
Do I see that happening on the basis of our owner who tends to make headlines most of the time? I don't see that happening. I see someone with like kind of a name value type guy coming in. But
we should talk about this because in his plan, like you mentioned before we started recording, that you thought this was perhaps the most lucid we've ever heard Eugene Melnyk.
This is true.
Departure from his like past that we've become used to, that false bravado and like, yeah, we're going all the way. Everything's going to be... The river, the Rideau Canal is made of chocolate and everything's going to be fine. You know? It's not the same spiel that we've like heard in the past, and it's kind of refreshing in a way. Like, it sucks that we're in this situation, but it's refreshing to hear that the organization's maybe to at least they're willing to acknowledge that they fucked up and that things can get righted, and we can start going, you know, forward without all these quick fix garbage booze just to keep this team competitive for that bubble playoff seed.
Yeah, and as much as I'm not, I guess I can say I'm not a huge Eugene Melnyk fan from a, I really don't like what he says because it's like you say, that false bravado, whatever. But reading the article today, like what struck me as I was finally like, here's the guy who used his incredible business acumen to build multi-billion dollar corporations. And it seems like finally he's realized that maybe he has to start taking that approach when it comes to running his hockey team as well. And I think that's a little bit encouraging from a fan standpoint that maybe he's
getting it.
Maybe he's starting to understand.
I think part of that is that he bought the team when the team was kind of like at their pinnacle, or at least in the latter stages of their twilight years. And I think that's definitely had a part in it where, you know, you use that 2007 season as the gold standard and then you desperately try and cling on as it slips through your fingers. I think that definitely played a part, and maybe that kind of skewed his ideas and way of like what it takes to be a winner in the NHL. And I think this is like a humbling reminder to Eugene that you have to treat this as a business. It's not just a pet that you can just, you know, play with and like rub its stomach once and every now and then and just get some smiles and some fucking memories from that, because, you know, it is a business and you have to start treating it like that, especially if you want to get that Stanley Cup that he keeps reminding us will be coming our way soon.
Exactly. I think there is some sort of encouraging type of inspiration that we could take away from his comments today.
But we didn't get Nabokov. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Are you surprised that on the basis of the absolute clusterfuck that this season, we didn't try and go out and get someone like if Nabokov on waivers? Like, I would have seen that as just the cherry on top of the shit Sunday that this season has become.
Well,
you know,
well, they might have put in a claim on him. Well, like, we'll never know because he was picked first by the Islanders, so he never got to that stage, so we'll never really know, I don't think, whether or not we put in a claim on him. But it doesn't even matter because Ottawa's so bad that I doubt that Nabokov would have reported. Like, he hasn't opted to play for the Islanders yet. I don't think he will.
Yeah, and I mean, we spoke about this yesterday, but do you hold that against him that he doesn't want to?
He was a free agent. If he wanted to sign with the Islanders, he would have negotiated a deal to sign with the Islanders. He wants to play for a winner. He's 35 years old. I'm sure he'll. Well, it depends on what kind of like legal recourse the Islanders have to get this
coerce
contract.
Him into playing for them.
Well, and it could come to that, which is sad. But I like he's 35 years old. If he wanted to play that badly, he'd just stay in the KHL. But he wants to play for an NHL winner, and he's played a number of years with San Jose. And personally, like, I don't blame him. Like, why would you want to play with the Islanders? Like, they're the worst place team. Why would you want to play the remainder of the season with the Islanders? There's no benefit other than, yeah, you get into a couple games.
I mean, I hope he plays for the Islanders because that might increase their point total, which means that
from a
selfish standpoint, you know, we might be lining ourselves up really, really nicely for Gabriel Landeskog, which would be absolutely outstanding. But yeah, I don't think he's going to play. He's probably it'll be kind of interesting to watch to see how that situation sort of develops, because that could set a really intriguing and interesting precedent in terms of
Bob McKenzie was mentioning on TSN that maybe you could use the Yashin precedent where he held out for a year and that never counted against his contract. So until he fulfills that season on his contract, he's the Islanders' property. But he's in a tough position because they can't trade him. In order for him to go to another team, he has to get waived and claimed again.
Can you explain to me what the hell Garth Snow was thinking when he put in the claim in the first place?
Like, they have two young rookie netminders in Nets.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not going anywhere. So, like, I just don't understand the logic behind making that.
They're a circus, dude. The Islanders are a circus.
So we can, obviously, things have gotten quite terrible this year. And one of the things I want to start doing is to be one of the thought leaders and provokers of the Free Alfie campaign.
Is this like the Jersey Shore Free Snooki campaign?
It's like the Free Steve Nash campaign that Chris Webber started on TNT the other night. And what I want to do is I want to make a formal request to the Ottawa Senators. I want to appeal to the whatever good nature Brian Murray might have to free Daniel Alfredsson from this terrible sentence that he's been saddled with, or that he will continue to be saddled with until essentially his career is over in the NHL, to continue playing for this organization. And so what I want to do is I want to make an appeal that as fans and as being thankful fans of everything that Daniel Alfredsson has done for this franchise, we demand that the Ottawa Senators free him from his current place in the organization and given him opportunity to go play for a contender.
Hey, if he wants out, he wants out. I wouldn't object to it. I'm just that kind of fan. Like, I'm not going to hold it against him if he wants to get traded. And I think if you could trade him for some decent players, then hey, all the power to Ottawa. But whether or not he's that kind of guy, never really shown a willingness or a desire to lead this organization in the past. So if he wants to move on, nobody...
All joking aside, I think he's done everything for the organization. And I think unlike, for example, the Sundin situation in Toronto, if Daniel Alfredsson wants to stay, I think he's earned that right. If he wants to go, I think he's earned that right as well. So whatever he ultimately decides to do and however the organization decides to handle it, I think we have to accept it either way.
So it's about that time when we should call our next guest. Joining us after the break will be Wayne Scanlon from the Ottawa Citizen. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back, Sens fans, to the Sixth Sense podcast. We're joined now by our guest this week, Mr. Wayne Scanlon from the Ottawa Citizen. Wayne, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Things could be a little bit better.
Couldn't they, though?
Oh, God.
So, Wayne, recently you wrote an article in the Citizen that said, or that was asking for Eugene Melnyk to come out and go public with some of his comments about the direction of this team. His silence has been deafening, I believe, were the words that you used. He finally came out last night with some comments. What do you make of what he had to say last night?
Well, first of all, it's interesting that he chose to speak to the other paper, the Ottawa Sun, and not our paper, the Ottawa Citizen. I think, there's a few things about that. I think he's got a little bit of an axe to grind with our paper for a variety of reasons. And you know what? I'm okay with that, because I think that kind of leaves us free to make fair comment and to not be sort of beholding to him. So I don't mind that. Now, as far as what he had to say, I don't think he said very much other than that the coach and the GM are status quo for the rest of the season. And I think that's the only question that remained, was whether or not he might make a change before the season was over. There would be two reasons to make changes. One, if he thought he had a potential to catch a playoff spot, and then you let go of the coach because you've got to make a change to make something happen with this team. Secondly, with the GM position, if Brian Murray is not going to be your guy after this season to make the changes and the rebuild that's necessary here, then do you want him making the decisions at the trade deadline, which is, of course, February 28th? And he has decided that we're not going to say anything about next year, but Murray is going to be the guy at the trade deadline, and I find that interesting, but I'm not surprised by that. These two have been very close over the years. Melnick is out of town almost all the time, and Murray is the guy that's his pipeline here. And you know, I'm just writing a piece for tomorrow, and I'm again reiterating that he's almost like a son to Eugene Melnick. So not going to be easy to part company with Brian Murray. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to see him in an advisory role. I think he's going to be bumped. I've been hearing this for a while now, that he would be bumped upstairs. Somebody new comes in, whether it's Pierre McGuire, but there'll be a new GM next season, and Brian Murray will have some kind of a fuzzy presidential advisory, Scotty Bowman-type role in the organization.
Now, Wayne, do you think that these comments are reflective of the fact that it's hard to hire a candidate, sort of a general manager candidate, during the season? Or do you think it's because he would like to see Brian Murray and Corey Clouston kind of see it through till the end of the year?
You know, it's hard to say, because depending on, I don't know who he might have in mind. I mean, Pierre McGuire, I would think, could be made available by the trade deadline. If you went to him and said, look, you're our candidate, we don't even want to talk to anybody else, we want a guy that's going to start making decisions about this organization, you know, going forward, and we want that guy to be, and even if you kept Brian around and the two of them could work together. But if there's somebody that's under contract right now that you think might be, you know, would have to at least wait, maybe he's an assistant GM somewhere else, or, you know, he's the chief of their scouting staff or whatever, and you can't really steal a guy who's under contract for the rest of the season, and so then it makes sense to wait until this season is over and then have him in place, you know, prior to the draft.
Wayne, I've been talking to Francois about this over the phone a lot lately, and we've been kind of looking towards the deadline, saying, all right, if Brian Murray is the guy who's going to lead the direction of this team moving forward till at least July 1st or whenever his contract actually does expire, if he has any kind of level of success on the deadline day, how much rope will that give a guy like Tim Murray to maybe succeed him as a potential successor next season? And if Tim Murray actually gets the job, do you think the fans will be slighted, that they'll see this as just an extension of Brian Murray?
No, I think you've hit it there. I think fans would react poorly. I know that just looking at some of the reaction that I get and the polls that have been taken in our newspaper and then the Sun newspaper, fans want to see a change at the top, and they're less concerned about who's coaching this team with compared to who's generally managing this team, as I like to say sometimes. And I think they do want change, and I think that Tim Murray is just the connection is that, you know, two peas in a pod, running the team here and running the team in Binghamton, and, you know, stalking that AHL team down there. I think in terms of, you know, marketing the team and taking a new direction, it would just be perceived as just a transition of power that continues that the same, you know, Murray regime. And I don't think people will stand for that. I think they would react very badly. And this team is going to need fans on board going forward here, because, you know, let's face it, they're going to be getting rid of a lot of payroll. They're going to have some new young faces coming in. It could be years before this team is extremely competitive again. It might be sooner, but it may take a while, and you're going to need fans on board with the rebuild. And I think to have fans on board, they need to see a new image, a new vision, a new guy at the top. And Tim Murray, you know, not only doesn't have, you know, much sparkle or pizzazz, much personality, but he is just going to represent more of the same with, you know, it's just, it's going to look like Brian Murray Jr. or son of, and he is indeed the nephew of Brian Murray, and I think he's a good hockey man. I just don't think that the time is right for him to take over this organization.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I mean, the fans are, I think the fans are demanding a rebuild, and you know, although it is difficult, do you not think that bringing in a new general manager and providing him with the opportunity to use the trade deadline as a platform to start executing his, you know, medium to long-term plan, do you think fans would be disappointed if a new general manager was not in place by, say, the trade deadline?
I've already had emails today saying this is crazy. You know, this is crazy maintaining status quo until the end of the season. What team would do that? But again, I don't know exactly who they've got in mind, or if there's a few candidates that they have in mind that they feel won't really be fully available until the end of the season. And so you're paying these people. Why not just have them fulfill the mandate that you have? And remember that Brian Murray is no longer going to be going out at the deadline and picking up more expensive players or giving up more draft choices. There's not much damage he can do, you know, if you don't mind that expression, because I think he's going to be under Melnick's orders basically to pare salary and to collect draft picks, which is essentially what a new guy would do anyway. So, you know, I don't worry about a guy being at the controls that's going to do serious damage here. You know, they're not going to be giving up any precious draft picks. They're only going to be collecting them, and they're only going to be trading, you know, some of the, you know, expensive talent that they have on this roster and underperforming talent at that, and trying to pick up prospects and draft picks in return.
You mentioned earlier that this rebuild, if assuming that Ottawa does do it, the rebuild could take years. And you look at some of the names that have been bandied about as potential trade acquisitions for other teams off Ottawa's roster, and there's not a lot of value if you're just looking at unrestricted free agents, guys like Kovalev, Ruutu, possibly Chris Phillips. Francois and I have mentioned in the past that general managers who've made the ascent from a head coaching position to a general manager job, guys like Jacques Martin, Daryl Sutter in Calgary, and Brian Murray and Pat Quinn as well, guys like that have kind of held a bias when they made that jump up the ranks. And maybe it might be tougher for a guy like Brian Murray to deal some of these core players who are locked up to longer-term deals. How do you feel about how Ottawa should move some of their pieces around the deadline time?
I don't know. He might be so annoyed with them, he'd be happy to get rid of them because they basically cost him his job. I mean, there's, you know, he was the one that handed out all these long-term contracts to Fisher and Alfredson and Spezza and Heatley and all these guys. And, you know, and Heatley demanded a trade, and Spezza last summer nearly had to be traded. I just don't know. I think he'd be fine in terms of dumping some of those guys, the ones that are still here. But I don't think there's much market. There's too much term and money left on the contracts of these players for, you know, other than the guys that you mentioned, the guys that the pending UFAs that he can, you know, try to get at least some kind of a draft pick for at the deadline. If he could get rid of any of those guys that you mentioned, that, you know, I think they'd be great with that. But in terms of peddling a Mike Fisher or, you know, someone along that lines, you know, I think he'd be willing to do it, but I don't see anybody wanting to take on term, especially at the deadline. That's the kind of deal that you might get done, you know, at the draft when you start to work on those bigger deals and teams are restructuring and they have more money and all of that. So that's the kind of deal that gets done at a draft table. It's not the kind of deal that gets done at the trade deadline. And by then, you know, presumably there's a new GM on board here.
Trade-wise, one of the more interesting subplots that is kind of taboo when you talk to Ottawa Senators fans is, you know, the prospect of potentially considering trading Daniel Alfredson. Graham and I were at a game earlier this week, and both of us, when we were speaking after the game, he looks like he's playing hurt or something. I mean, he looks like someone who
you could potentially not even play next year and retire. I mean, he looks like his health is a serious question mark. What's your stance on potentially, you know, looking at trading Daniel Alfredsson, or, you know, where do you think he fits in, say, next year and then maybe moving forward with this organization?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and, you know, I don't dispute your observations, because we have much the same discussions up in the press box, and we're there every night watching this group, and Alfredsson is struggling. There's no question about that. You know, we may find out that there's an undisclosed injury that's made it difficult for him to perform. Otherwise, we're just left to assume that this is the natural aging process of a very good National Hockey League player. Well, whether you're very good or not, you hit that point where you just can no longer do the things you used to do. He does have a couple of years left on his contract. In terms of moving him, I think it would have to be handled very delicately. You don't just trade an Alfredsson and call him up one day and say, you know, we've sent you to Detroit for this and this, and that's how it's going to be. You talk to him and ask if he has a wish to be moved, to have a chance to win a cup before he retires, because there obviously is going to be no opportunity here, not this year, and probably not for the next couple of seasons. And then, you know, if failing that, and if he completes the season here, you know, I think this will be his decision whether or not he wants to go forward. And I could see, you know, there's always that possibility, I suppose, that he says, I've had enough. We have a new child coming in the spring, and I'm going to, you know, forego the final 2 years of my contract, but stay with the organization. I mean, I think there's that possibility that could happen. I'm not saying it will, but I mean, it's obviously something that we would ask him about as the season winds down.
I've never seen Alfredsson turn the puck over as much as he has in the last couple of weeks, especially during that Anaheim game. It was noticeable, and even a couple of times against Montreal. It's just been kind of depressing and sad just to watch him go. I just don't understand. Or I wouldn't understand, besides the money being involved next year, motivations would be to like just endure another possible year like this, just to be a mentor to some of these kids.
Well, and he's a guy that I don't think has ever really been driven by money. He's a man of sort of simple taste. You know, I know the family a little bit, and I just know how they live. It's a pretty simple European lifestyle. Doesn't live in a castle here in Ottawa. He doesn't live in a castle over in Sweden. Very modest, down-to-earth family. And so, you know, and he's a very, very proud athlete. So, you know, at the end of the season, he's going to just have to decide. I mean, if it is an injury thing and he thinks he can bounce back, then, you know, then that could easily happen. But if he feels that he just can't do it anymore, you know, then he's going to have to make that decision.
A lot of fans, Wayne, have been talking about a potential like quick fix scenario. How would you approach the summer in terms of signings? Because in the last couple of years, with the core that we've had, we've tried to augment it with players, like overage players who are past their prime, and Gonchar and Kovalev. How would you approach this this summer? Because a lot of cap money is coming off the books.
Yeah, there is. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like a great summer in terms of of free agents, bringing free agents in here. But I think you need I think you're right on. And I think Melnyk understands this. As much as he's removed from the hockey club and relies on Murray for his information, we had a sit down with him before the season, and he talked about, you know, this being an important year because he was going to get some money off the books. And I asked him specifically, are you going to continue to spend to the cap limit? You know, year after year, you've been doing that. You've been consistently doing that and haven't had the results. And he said, you know, I can see the trend coming, not just here, but elsewhere, where teams aren't necessarily going to spend to the cap. And, you know, the idea of throwing a whole bunch of money at veteran UFAs is not necessarily the way to go. And he talked about getting younger, about developing through, you know, from within, getting people from your AHL team to replace some of the veterans that are leaving, which of course means you have to develop a strong, you know, farm program. Your drafting has to be good. And I think in terms of signing free agents, I mean, we have to hope they've learned the lesson that signing these 35 and older guys with, you know, giving them retirement contracts just because they've had good careers, it's just not working out. It's been a complete disaster. Lesson learned. Let's not do it again in terms of, you know, guys like Gonchar and Kovalev and that Gonchar deal. I mean, they're going to have to live with that for two more years. And who the heck's going to take that deal? Nobody. So I really think that the new guy and certainly the owner will understand that that's not the way to go.
A lot of fans here in Ottawa have enjoyed making Jason Spezza the scapegoat for a lot of the things that go on with the Senators. And one of the things recently that we've started to notice is just how abysmal this team actually is now that he's not in the lineup. Do you think that through his improved two-way play this year and now the noticeable void in the lineup that we've seen with his injury, Jason Spezza has really cemented himself as a building block that you would like to retain moving forward as you try and as we try and execute somewhat of a rebuild to get back towards contending for a Stanley Cup?
Well, I would think so. And you know what? Whether he's cemented himself as that building block or not, he pretty much has to be. I mean, just look around. Who else is there? I mean, Phillips is winding down and may not be back. We don't know. He's a pending UFA. Alfredson, we've discussed. You know, Mike Fisher has had a pretty tough year and is not as, you know, nearly as young as Spezza. And Spezza has all that term and he's, you know, they tried to move him last summer and were not able to. Certainly kick the tires anyway. So I think he has to be a guy. He has to be here. So why not make him the key component? And if you can surround him, you know, you go back to 2006 and 7 when they had Heatley here and Alfredson still in his prime. You know, that was, you know, one of the most dynamic lines in hockey, if not the best. And carry them all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And you saw what Spezza could do. And as you say, he's a little bit better now in terms of his defense. His face-offs are better. You know, they're still going to get you know, the odd turnover, but you can live with that if you're and as you say again, you understand that there's so many other problems with this team that he's probably the least of their worries. So again, it's going to be about surrounding him with some decent players so that you can have a legitimate number one line. They don't have a number one line anymore. You know, they barely have a number two line. Really, this is a team of third and fourth liners, especially with, you know, the injuries that they've had and the guys that have just faded into the background. So, he's a key part.
You know, just kind of one final question to wrap things up. Graham and I are huge baseball fans. And one of the things we've really enjoyed over the course of the past year is watching Alex Anthopoulos start to make some really great trades for the Blue Jays. Most recently, yesterday, or two days ago? Vernon Wells trade, which was, I mean, it's a great trade. You get out from under a huge contract. You have to take a little bit of bad salary back, but it's essentially that willingness to take a small step back in terms of the composition of the current roster to be able to hopefully take leaps and bounds ahead moving forward. Do you think fans need to temper their expectations a little bit in terms of expecting even return from an NHL-ready player standpoint if they were to make deals moving forward and really start to view some of these guys as contracts that we can get rid of and give ourselves more flexibility moving forward?
I do think there's an education process there that people have to get their head around that a little bit, and I think we've had that problem here in Ottawa with, and it's not just here, with fans and media, and even the general manager has basically admitted that at times you fall in love with your players. And, I've talked to GMs a lot over the last couple of years about taking more of the money ball approach, that when you look at the Oakland A's, when they have a closer that gets well-known around baseball, that's usually the day that they get rid of him, you know, because he's going to command a big salary. And then the Oakland A's come up with somebody else in the system that we've never heard of. But guess what? He could throw 98 as well, and he comes cheap. And then they ride him for a couple of years, and then he gets expensive, and they cut him loose. And they do that because they have to. And I think the issue with the NHL is you have teams like Ottawa that, because the cap was considered somewhat reasonable when it was, you know, sort of $40 million and change, now it's 58. And I think some teams are recognizing that you don't always get what you pay for. And especially here in Ottawa, you know, hopefully they've learned that lesson. $58 million, as I tried to point out in today's column, boy, was that, it's like giving your money away. This is a team that's not even getting a sniff of the playoffs, and they've spent right to the cap limit. I mean, that's just disastrous. And I think a little bit of that Moneyball approach, where you don't necessarily fall in love with your players, you recognize that some of these guys will have to move on, and it's a delicate decision. Who stays and who goes? It can be, you know, it can make the difference between you having a contender perennially, or you're always in trouble because you're getting stuck with term and deals that nobody else wants.
Yeah, I was actually, it's funny that we're talking about that. I was at a guy like Jarkko Ruutu, coming off a career offensive season last year, and I thought that guy would have been the perfect guy to kind of capitalize on a high trade value at the time, because we had players like Zach Smith in the system to replace him. But it just seems like we're content to like bury some of these guys who might be third or fourth liners, but at least they could play at this level.
Yeah, and there's a guy, you know, with 1 year left on that deal, and if you could have peddled him last summer, and you know, and I honestly thought it might happen, because you have a Zach Smith, or someone like that, that there's that kind of guy. I don't want to say dime a dozen, because he does have a lot of NHL experience. That, you know, he's a sneaky player that is built up years of guile, I guess, and trickery that a rookie wouldn't have. But you know, just disturbing a little bit and a checking role, a third or fourth liner. I think this organization has a ton of those kinds of players. So, you know, if they could have got some value for Jarkko Ruutu, and of course hindsight's 2020, but you know, picked up a precious draft pick or something for him, that would have gone a long way going forward to, you know, similar moves like that. But I think they didn't have that mindset then, because they, you know, Brian's always had this idea that we're just maybe one or two players away from a real contender. And one of those players might be a goaltender, which is a whole other issue. But yeah, I think the mindset is going to be very different going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, another move like the Mazzaros trade from a few years ago, where, again, you can probably go out and sign a guy comparable to Filip Kuba on a year-by-year basis, on an ad hoc sort of basis to supplement the roster. And, you know, some of these moves where it's like, well, we need these NHL-ready guys to come back the other way right away when you could have taken picks or prospects and continue moving forward. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous when you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but looking back on some of these moves, you just, and I mean, looking at Filip Kuba's play now, you question some of these moves and what the motivation and rationale behind them was.
Yeah, and there's a guy that looked, you know, he looked okay when he came in, and he's, you know, and especially with that injury he had in training camp, has really deteriorated. But, you know, other teams have done it. Anaheim had to completely rebuild their defense, you know, and they get a Cam Fowler who, you know, blossoms as an 18, now he's 19-year-old rookie. But they also pick up a guy like Tony Ludeman, who is a guy that's just kind of kicking around. He played for the Buffalo Sabres. He's been a key part of that team, and I think they paid $3 million for him. He's got another year or so left. But, you know, that was a, you know, and it looks now like a pretty good signing.
It's always the moves that don't happen on July 1st that end up making a team better. Wayne, thank you very much. We enjoyed having you on. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Looking
good
forward to your
it.
Yeah, looking forward to your article tomorrow.
Go Sens, go.
So welcome back to the final segment of the Sixth Sense podcast. This is going to be a little bit different, I think. I mean, most conversations that we have on the show, we never really argue too much. But after kind of some of the conversations that we've had this week, maybe it would be a good idea to hit on the sporadic use of Peter Regan.
We're going
to
take the gloves off. You almost cried there when Scanlon didn't talk about your boy in the interview. You were trying to slip something in to just get the name dropped during the podcast. You're so in love with Peter Regan. God. The only thing I like about Peter Regan is his jersey number, 13.
13?
Yeah.
You don't like the fact that he's young, might have some offensive upside?
He's 24.
So?
Or whatever he is.
So?
Come
he's
on, man.
He's a sophomore, man.
Come on, man.
Don't go all Keyshawn Johnson on me.
Go all Tom. Yeah, Tom Jackson. This is for you, Tom Jackson. Did you hear that Bart Scott thing?
I just look at Peter Regan as a guy who has some offensive upside, as a guy who possibly has a future in this organization. I look at the bottom of our roster, and you see guys like Ryan Shannon, He's an unrestricted free agent. You see a couple other guys who, you know, they've had relatively long looks. And I can kind of empathize with Regan because he's kind of been saddled all season long playing with a guy who shows up every third game for maybe a shift or two. Like, he's played the whole season with Alexei Kovalev.
I guess the counterpoint to that is, if this guy really is a true top six guy, like, okay, fine, he's playing limited minutes on the third line, whatever. If this guy truly has the offensive ability of a guy who projects as a legitimate top six NHL forward, do you not think that he should be able to take advantage of what you think are significant matchup advantages that he would have over your average NHL third line player?
Has anyone taken advantage of the significant minutes that they've been given? Honestly. Like, name someone who's overachieved offensively.
No, but what I think my issue is
don't get me wrong. I don't think Peter Regan's good enough to carry anybody on this team. I don't think he ever will be that guy, but I think he could be like a complimentary guy who chips in like 15 goals a year.
Yeah, but
and that's all I'm saying. That's better than half the shit on the roster.
Yeah, but I mean, at this point, given how the season has unfolded, I don't have an issue with Regan getting scratched anymore. With Sutter getting scratched or anybody else getting scratched.
No, but at some point, I agree.
He sucks as bad as the rest of them.
It's a numbers game, and at some point, you do have to produce. But I think that guy has generated a ton of scoring opportunities throughout the course of the season.
He has no finish.
You're not going to put up tons of points playing with guys like Ryan Shannon or Jesse Winchester or Alexei Kovalev.
I just think like expectations need to be tempered about this guy.
No.
I don't think that if you play him and you play him more, the guy's automatically going to turn into this guy who ceiling projects as like a 25 goal guy. And I maybe that was the source of our disagreement when we got into it the other day about Peter Regan. Is I was under the impression that you thought this guy was the second coming after his guy was the second coming after the Pittsburgh series.
I just think it
year.
Could be a situation like it's like Patrick Eves all over again, right? Like that guy had 19 goals in half a season. I think
that's playing on a phenomenal team, right?
Like but I mean, I think there is some skill there. I think there is some stuff. There is some upside. I think. For any young player who you see who has some upside, you want that player to do well. You want to see him in the lineup. And this team is such a veteran-laden, crappy team that like I wouldn't have a problem seeing Regan in the lineup on a daily basis.
I can accept your point. My issue is this guy is not the blue chipper that people are trying to make him out to be.
I just look at Ottawa's roster.
He's Dackel. He's another Dackel.
No, Dackel's
look
terrible.
At the points. Look at the production. It is
yeah,
identical.
But they're not the same player. I don't care.
Dackel was able to score.
No, he played with Alexei Yashin.
So when Regan played with Spezza, he scored three goals in the Pittsburgh series. You take him away from Spezza, he doesn't do fuck all out there.
Well,
he doesn't hit. He's soft. He doesn't bring anything to the table if he's not passing the puck because he can't freaking finish either. Like, come on, man. Come on, man.
But if you're playing with a bunch of cyclists on one line, what the hell are you going to do? What are you going to do? And don't tell me that he hasn't set up a number of guys with scoring opportunities. When he was playing with Spezza, they generated like an offensive chance almost every shift they were out there. It just the numbers weren't there. It didn't manifest. I wish the NHL kept a better track, more public track of like scoring opportunities that guys generate. I think that'd be a better
like
indication
like a player efficiency rating.
Yeah,
like or like an absolute zone.
That'd
like
be interesting.
Like in baseball, yeah. Yeah,
at least like a more public.
Yeah, I'm sure Regan.
Because that would be better
Regan.
Than shot totals, right? Because you can take a shot from anywhere.
I think one of the things to transition away from your favorite subject of conversation, which is Peter Regan, of course. there are a few things I have noticed that I think are kind of encouraging, and I'm not saying these two individuals have played themselves into untouchable status. God, I'm not suggesting that. I don't think there are any untouchables on this team. The one things I will say. I've been hard on number 71 pretty much throughout his entire NHL career. I think the guy, Nick Foligno, has really demonstrated that he can be a legitimate third-line guy on this team, prototypical type of third-line checking winger with a little bit of offensive ability. I think in the last couple of games he's really emerged, and it's almost like he's found his identity as a player.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, I think McCulloch recently has, it seems like it's taken him almost a full year to get over that knee injury. It seems like he's skating better now, and he's starting to demonstrate flashes of the type of player that we thought we got when he first came over in the Heatley deal. And I think that's kind of a little bit encouraging moving forward, do you not?
Yeah, like Mlemaholic, obviously he had the knee injury. And he's starting to skate well. I think a lot of people have noticed a progression in his ability. And, he's getting more scoring opportunities out of it, and he's finally starting to cash in on some of them. So I think that bodes well. Would would his improved play preclude me from ever discussing his name in trade negotiations? Absolutely not, because of the you know, his contract is backlogged in terms of real dollar value. So I think that would be a guy, if you're looking to cut salary and get a decent return on a player, he'd be a guy I'd look at. Ditto for Mike Fisher.
Yeah, and McCulloch, well, Fisher as well, but McCulloch I think is the type of player who given his skill set, would be a very attractive guy to a contender-ish team looking to augment their.
You can
their
never
top
question
six.
That guy's work ethic, though. Like,
yeah, I mean, aside from the fact that he seems to fall on his ass once a shift, I mean, he is somewhat dynamic as a player, and I could see that guy fitting in quite nicely to, like I say, a contender type team's top six forwards, power play, penalty killing, that type of stuff. I mean, he does have the skill set that would allow him to do that. It would be interesting to kind of explore potential maybe trade avenues for that guy, because in a rebuild, he's not the type of guy who is the difference between you making or not making the playoffs or whatever.
No, he's a nice player on a good team.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Francois, it's been a pleasure. I would just like to thank Wayne Scanlon for coming on the program this afternoon. I think that'll be it for another day. Sorry, listeners, for not putting out more podcasts more frequently, but due to some personal time constraints, it's been rather difficult, so we've had to book a new studio time.
Hopefully. Contrary to popular belief, we actually have personal lives outside of the Ottawa Senators.
But
so.
We've rescheduled studio for Pacific time on weekends now, so it's going to hopefully be a little bit more beneficial for you and to us. So, yeah. Anyways, good show. Thanks again, Wayne Scanlon. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate having you on. And Francois, been a pleasure, man.
As always, I have thoroughly enjoyed myself.
So rough, dude. We'll be right back.